begins now.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
I'm Upenyu Makoni Matenga. JT,
say your name.
My name's Jonathan Matenga, the Puma Matenga.
Yeah, we've replaced Henry. 2018, there's new things happening. So
God, we're grooming the successor.
Yeah, other parties failed to groom their successors, and they were then removed in a coup, not a coup. So, and it looks like the other party is facing another situation altogether with its own factions. So we've decided, let's catch them young and let's say, teach them how the world works. But welcome to Politics and Beyond. Today is what's the date today? 21st of January.
Yes.
We as you know, we record on three different continents, and Henry is currently unavailable. If he might come through, so you might just hear him pop in at some point during the conversation. Upenyu Ndebi, we didn't have you on
how
last
are you?
Week. I'm good, Shah. What's happening with you? 2018. Yakamira say Zimbabwe.
You guys not accoued me, and then I called my friend with tanks, Jonathan Matenga.
DS Bimo, you guys, ndafonerwa makusense chaiko zvikanzie today. Make sure. Ndikati, hey, all right, chef.
Yeah, but otherwise I'm good. Sure, Zimbabwe is hard, guys. The prices haven't gone down. They've gone up. I don't know. If you're in Zim, please, you know what? If you're in Zim and you see this podcast and you listened to it and Newe or Kuche Manema prices, please like the post on the podcast, because it's hard. It's really, really hard here.
Yeah, no, things I don't suppose are going as people expected them to when they marched onto the streets and were hoping for, a new dispensation. But let me say though, this we called. Obviously it was not Mugabe goes and things are fixed. That would have been, But
are you telling the people we told you so? Is that what you're doing?
No,
Shane?
No. I'm not telling anyone, because everyone knew. Surely people knew themselves. Yes, that's what we want. And this is also, part of the debate in terms of now people are analyzing the situation. I mean, you have Jonathan calling from, and not Jonathan Matenga, but the professor Jonathan calling from whichever cupboard he happens to find himself in whenever the day is. And he's saying, including, what's his name? Anzan Mwake Joao. He's all
Patrick.
Yeah,
ooh,
Patrick.
Shame Patrick.
So it's just, a situation of what's actually happening out there in the society and who's fooling who. But we did know that Mugabe had to go, but things were going to need something else for them for us to change from the position we're in. Because we were spiraling at the time that Mugabe left.
We were spiraling.
At the time that Mugabe left, things were spiraling, at a very fast rate. So the question then is, has this change in government stemmed the bleed? Because the bleed is we're still bleeding,
Yeah.
But are we moving towards a better position? That is the question.
That is the question. And I think it's still remains. I mean, listen, this is the same cast of characters that caused the spiral and the bleed and the wound and our current predicament. It's not, they haven't brought in anyone new yet into official government positions. And in fact, they're playing cat and mouse with old people and, kissing ass for other old people. But the issue is, will this government be able to change enough so that we can survive at least to not this election, but the one in 2023. That's the really important one.
Right.
We'll see.
So indeed we'll see. And speaking about what we think or what's happening, what they're trying to do, we're going to speak about a couple of things today. We're going to speak about the road to Davos, which is, you know, the big thing right
now. So exciting.
Yeah, it's the big thing right now. ED's first showing at an international platform, going to look for investors and investment, you know, going to suck up to the world, you know, and present Zimbabwe as a new...
The world, I don't know. I think he's going to suck up to the nations with money. Because the world would be like Jacob and them, and you know.
But he's already been to South Africa. He's been to South Africa. He's been to Namibia. He's been to Mozambique. He's been to Zambia. I think Congo, Sara, Botswana. You know, of Angola, he's gone. So he's done with his region. Now he's going to look for the big money boys. So yeah. So we'll discuss a bit about that, and then if we get time, because Upenyu's been she's been dying to speak about the opposition. Ani ma totsake hobo. Oh boy, so many things to say about the opposition.
I'm in my feels now. I'm in my feelings.
What
was that statement?
We'll get to it. I don't know which one you're talking about. But so let's go road to Davos. A couple of things happened this past week. It's actually been a busy week for our head of state. He traveled. He went to Namibia. He went to Zambia. He went to Mozambique. I don't know if Angola must have been the week before, and then I think I think he's going to Botswana as well. So he's going around the region. We spoke about this a bit last week that, you know, obviously he's going to rally up the support, and he has interests in making sure that they're all on his side. In between that, he held meetings with the business community. Part of his road to Davos, where he wanted to hear what their concerns were and also how he can incorporate what they are saying into his plan for Davos when he goes next week. It starts on the 26th to the 28th. So next week, Friday, next weekend, I think is when he's going. And then he also had a meeting with the youth, the controversial meeting with the youth. And I call it controversial because
arguable that there were no youth in that room. But anyway,
no, there certainly were youth in the room, but there were a lot of things that happened in that meeting that, you know, people then had very interesting comments about, myself included, afterwards. So let's start on, you know, what you think about this
road to Davos.
Yeah, what do you think about us going to Davos? What do you hope that we'll get from Davos? And ED has said the message that has been going around from this Davos thing. Also, yeah, in between that, he also did two interviews, one with the Financial Times and another with Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. Financial Times was
lunch with the FT.
And that's on their website, and there's a full transcript as well. Alec Russell wrote a very lovely piece, brilliant writer, and there's the full transcript of the interview as well there. And then he did the Bloomberg interview. I saw the clip. It's about 10 minutes. You can look for it on the Bloomberg website.
The Bloomberg one, the way it even starts.
So that's what's happening. So there's, you know, all these things. It was a very busy week for our president last
it
week.
Was.
So what do you think of Davos? What do you think of the situation?
Listen, Davos is not that kind of party. I think people are thinking that he's going to go and he's going to come back with mega deals like when the Chinese premier came. I was going to say president, but it's really not that kind of party. It's a place where rich people go to talk about rich people things. You know, money talks to money. I do think that it's good for, in terms of international re-engagement and in terms of just reassuring the world that Zimbabwe isn't burning yet, don't send your troops. It's a good idea.
Okay, wait, you're breaking up. You're breaking up.
And actually,
you're much better.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah, much better.
It's like network issues, except I have Wi-Fi. Like, what's this about? you know? So I think our these guys need to have a meeting. First of all, ZANU-PF, and in particular Chinamasa and ED, they need to have a meeting and think and tell themselves that what they've been doing for the past 20 years, including that little time they sent Changirai to go and do exactly what ED is doing now, it didn't work. And maybe what we need to do is change strategy. I also think that this outward looking money will come to us if we say the right things and do the right things strategy isn't going to work, because we have money, we have capital in this country. Please explain to me why there's so many Benzes, brand new Benzes, by the way, on the roads. So that means there's money here. But it's keeping the money in Zimbabwe and getting domestic investors to invest in their own economy. Case in point, Strive. Aren't they sitting and asking themselves, why does Strive live in Joburg and not in Harare? Because the moment you can get Anna Strive to come and live in Zim, then you've answered the question. And then foreign investors will just come and be like, ah, may I want to party with Strive? He's also a billionaire. Don't you think?
But don't you think it's important, you know, that we do present this image to the world, you know, and change the perception that the world has on Zimbabwe? Because the Mugabe, the stigma, I suppose you can call it, has been, you know, it's been part of us for so long. And when people think of Zimbabwe, the first thing they think about is Mugabe. And now that he's gone, we have to, I see it as them going on the offensive. Even, of course, you know, mega deals aren't going to, you know, just pop up straight after Davos.
No.
There is, this is a platform where you have world leaders. Trump's going to be there. Merkel's going to be there. Macron's going to be there. You know, what's the guy from Canada? Trudeau's going to be there.
Trudeau's going to be there.
So you have all these world leaders in one place and you can engage with their people. You know, it's different from waiting for another opportunity in September, which is likely, you know, at the UN General Assembly when they'll all be together at the same time. This, as you said, is a platform. It's not just world leaders, but there's going to be business people there. There's going to be different people from different organizations, WTO and all sorts of things like that, who Henry's about to join us, I think. But you're going to have all these people who are available.
Powerful
as well. So I think
it's of the pudding is in the tasting. I mean, yes, no doubt. It's important to engage. Like I said, it's important to re-engage and be like, hey guys, we're here. We got rid of Mugabe. But you know, in any system that's diseased, it's very easy to blame the one symptom. Mugabe is actually the culmination of a system.
Yeah,
and the system still exists.
It does.
But
the system's also trying to change.
I'd still be cautious in engaging with him. If I was a Trudeau, a Macron, a Merkel, God.
Yeah, but no one says, Trump. Okay, first and foremost, the thing is, obviously they would be cautious, and no one says that, you know, you expect them to just hand us everything. But we do have to take an initiative. We have to present ourselves. They have to present a case for themselves. If they don't, then, you know, the past 20 years, these people haven't been engaging us, then they're not going to be bothered. They're just going to be like, oh, Zimbabwe's got a new president. That's nice. But if we go on the offensive and we knock on their doors and we say, hey, this is us, then they're going to actually, if, you know, because you're in a place for 3 odd days with these people, at some point they're going to listen to whatever it is you had to say, whether it's when you're grabbing coffee, and they might take something back with them and say, this is quite interesting. Also, I mean, the British have sent their emissaries twice. The British have sent 2 of their top emissaries to Zim in the past, you know, 2 months to see what's actually going on here. They're quite interested as well. So we have to take this is an opportunity, and I think that one we should take.
Mm-hmm.
And we are... Obviously, there's a lot that needs to be done. And I think, you know, the government has brought in the Petina Gapas of this world to consult. They've brought in consultants. Wait, you spoke about these guys need to sit down and have a meeting and, you know, discuss the past 20 years. They've brought in consultants to help them in terms of what it is they need to do.
But Chris, there's obvious, I mean, you don't need a Petina Gapa to tell you, for instance, that some of your ministers have been caught with their hands in the cookie jar repeatedly, and those same ministers have been reappointed and are currently members of cabinet, heading, for instance, the very obviously. Yeah, social contract between the police and citizens isn't going to change the fact that that entire organization and the system that supports it is still headed by a person who is alleged to be corrupt.
I agree with you completely that the government still has serious problems and issues, but it's not something that they can come in. Obviously, these are the same people that have been there for a while, but they can't come in and overhaul the entire system overnight.
Why not?
Because it just, and then when, before they go to elections, they'll lose. They'll obviously lose. They'll get completely swept.
If you show good faith, and if you, it's like with Command, right? They showed enough good faith to get past the line the first time.
They won't have the institutional capacity to even run and function government.
You mean to keep a stranglehold on the people of Zimbabwe?
To even function themselves, they won't have been able to function. Obviously, I definitely hear your concerns, and I'm not saying that, you know, we are perfect. We're far from it, right? But I think that this is an opportunity in terms of Davos that we had to take. It's an opportunity that you want to get yourselves out there and you want to do something, and you've brought in people to assist you on how best you can go about doing this. They have a serious concern in terms of they need to win the election, obviously, if they're going to continue past. So
the opposition itself isn't. I mean, should I even start on the opposition right now?
Okay, let's just pause here. Let me try and get Henry on the line.
I'm here.
Ah, you're there.
Hi, we replaced me with my son.
How long have you been here?
I was just listening to you talking about Davos Beer Chance. I apologize. It's 3:22 in the morning here.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's cool.
I happened to miss your first call.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Quickly on Davos, because we also need to discuss, like, now we've got, it's going to be long. We could spend the whole day talking about this. But your thoughts?
There's people are saying, why didn't they take the economic plan to Lotito before they took it to Davos? I think that's a silly argument. I think it's a good point. I think they should go and sell themselves to the world. And if people are buying, then so be it. But obviously one wonders how you can make it easy for international investors when local investors can't thrive in the market. So it's a double-edged sword, but I'm definitely happy about the whole thing in principle. But
so the thing is, right, we're talking about making it easy going to foreign investors when local investors can't thrive. Obviously, there are certain things that they're going to have to change in terms of the law, in terms of how they operate, ease of doing business, and all these things that investors are going to want to see these changes. And this is something they're going to have to do soon after they come back from this trip of theirs. So much, you can have all the nice rhetoric and say all the nice things. Saying Zimbabwe is open for business is one thing, but actually showing that Zimbabwe is open for business is another thing. And this is, I think, where they need to focus their efforts now, is making actual substantive changes that people can see that do make it easier, not just for foreign investors, but for local investors to put their money. And I completely agree with your point, Upenyu, that, you know, you need your strives to be coming back. You need all these people to come back, and that shows confidence in the system. And I hope all the people that government has been consulting on this issue have made it clear, and that the government actually has the plans to do these things rather than just, you know, leave it up in the air.
Shout out to Bettina for that consulting job.
Yeah, we did mention her.
Guys, Bettina has not received money for it. She's doing it because she's part of a think tank. You know, I feel like I'm now her spokesperson. She's doing it because she's part of a think tank and she loves this country and.
Yeah, no, I mean,
we're not saying it we're not being sarcastic.
Yeah, no, if anyone wants to know, you know, why she's doing it, it's on her Facebook page. You can go and check it out there. I feel it's people who are jealous or bitter or whatever it is, I don't know, who seem to have an agenda against, you know, her coming in. But I will say this, it's very clever on the government's part as well, because she has been a critic of the government. And now that she's part of the system, you know, she can't come out against the system as openly as she used to before.
Well, I think it, you know, first of all, I think the criticism comes from the idea that, you know, to be against something, it's like a visceral reaction to being against something. Mm-hmm. And logically, you cannot change something. You can't change something you don't like if you're constantly outside of it, if you don't engage with it in ways other than just to criticize it. And so, you know, I think Bettina's doing a very admirable thing by saying, okay, you know what? Let me work with you to change the things that I am able to help you change. And I can get you to this point. But obviously there's still going to be things that she doesn't like. Obviously there's, you know, she'll still be able to criticize. But the idea that you cannot criticize and work with the government to make it better is a ridiculous and stupid idea. And I think people really need to let go of that, and they really need to grow up a little bit just in terms of maturity. Because if you don't engage, if you're not willing to do the work that you're pointing out that other people must do, then all you're like the opposition. You're like the Changirais and the Chamisas of the world, just pointing at the problem, but you don't want to fix it.
Upenyu is just going, she keeps hinting this opposition.
I think a point of order there is that it comes from a position of privilege that you can engage the government in the way she's engaging. And the second thing you said that I disagree with is you can't engage this government and criticize it. If Bettina writes a Facebook status tomorrow saying that Davos went badly and these guys are unprofessional and they shouldn't have bought 70 delegation and it's still the same efficiencies, I guarantee you tomorrow she will be disengaged by the government. Mm-hmm. So by engaging in the way she's chosen, she's for some, and I agree with, I don't find a problem with it, but by engaging, and some people need to do it, but by engaging in the way she's chosen, she's necessarily given up her right to openly criticize the government. Maybe she's doing it behind closed doors, but she can't criticize them like the way she did Mugabe's regime. But, and that's something that I think she knows. And if you follow her closely, you can see in the way she posts.
But here's my thing. Is there merit in the criticism? Because she used to criticize on Facebook and, you know, in the media and things like that. Now she has an opportunity to shape the way that the government interacts with the international community, right? Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot more merit in that than her being on Facebook, you know, offering, you know, snide remarks about things happening or things that the government does. Because all that does is get people on a thread and they're all like, yes, yes, yes. And she says, you know, she'll say, add a joke here and there and people, you know, come out there. But now she's actually there helping the government to shape policy. She says she's writing a white paper on a couple of things.
Trade.
She's writing two white papers, one on trade and one on Brexit. I think that's brilliant because she's experienced. She's a brilliant lawyer. She's worked for the WTO. She knows her craft. You know, I'd rather have her there in such a position. We talk about technocrats and say that our government needs technocrats. These are the kind of people that we need. I'd rather have her in that space than her sitting on the outside criticizing and, you know, on Facebook or other spaces.
No. I mean, I agree with you 100%. Yeah. What I'm saying is that you do need people on the outside criticizing and saying and pointing out the mistakes publicly. It becomes disingenuous when you call and you say, oh, everyone engage. That's not everyone's role. There are people who should point out what is wrong, and you don't necessarily need to engage. You don't necessarily need to be on the inside. You don't necessarily need to sit in a room at a celebration center with air conditioning and tell jokes to engage with the government. Pointing out what's wrong is a form of engagement, and there is this distinct anti-opposition sentiment. I'm speaking to people like you in the country right now, and that's not to say the opposition is without its failings, but it doesn't undermine the actual position of the opposition. Pointing out without, we're not in power, pointing out without being able to do anything about the problem is traditionally the role of the opposition all over the world. I mean, the Democrats have been wow-wattering about Trump for the last 18 months. They haven't been necessarily able to do much about his policies.
So now, Henry.
Yeah, but that happens in an election year, which is this year. And you can say they're not doing anything to win elections, which I will agree. But you can't say that because they're not doing anything to win elections, they can't speak or point out what's wrong with the government. I don't think that's
I'm not saying people shouldn't point out or speak about what the problem is. My problem
that's what
is
we
that
do on this
that
podcast.
Has become the default position. That is the purpose of the podcast. Isn't that what we do every when we decide to record? My point is that it's impotent to simply, you know, say, yes, there's a place for that. And I believe it's journalism's role, actually, to be the watchdog on journalism. And to a certain extent, opposition. But opposition cannot then relegate itself simply to just saying, well, that's a problem, that's a problem, that's a problem. Where's the solution? Where are the solutions? And what is the alternative? Because opposition's role is not simply to say there's a problem. It's also to say, this is what we think about how we can solve the problem.
Yeah, no. I don't disagree with that.
So before we digress further into the opposition, let me just I'll make a mental note of that one, that the opposition and the alternative. I just want to go quickly to this issue of you know, wrap up Road to Davos on the youth issue, and you spoke about Celebration Center. Was Celebration Center the venue for the Global Shapers meeting?
Yeah, of course. Where do you have an elite gathering besides
Mikkels?
Mikkels Hotel is in the city. So if you want a truly elite gathering, you need to be in the north.
Wow.
In the Bard Hills.
On Thursday, Global Shapers, which is a, let me not get this wrong, but they are a part of the World Economic Forum. I think they are a youth gathering, part of the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum.
They're a para-WEF youth group.
Yeah, they're a youth group or a youth formation with part of the World Economic Forum based in different countries. There's shapers in all sorts of different countries. They invited the president to a town hall meeting that was dubbed the Road to Davos. And the president was to speak to a gathering of youth, and they were, you know, typical town hall. This is what we expected. And they were to engage on, you know, what the youth thinks about this new dispensation and, you know, what youth issues the president should take up and also to consider in the Road to Davos and in this Zimbabwe's open for business space. So the president came through. And they spent, I watched it on Facebook because it was invite only. And so there were certain people who could be there and others who could not be there. Speaking of which, I understand that our boy AC Lumumba was spotted, trying to get in, but he wasn't on the list, so he couldn't make it. Still an APB out for him. If you can get in touch with him, please tell him we're looking for him, you know, so he can give us a shout. Anyway, yeah, so I watched it on Facebook. It was an hour and a half. The first 30 minutes was national anthem, speeches, prayers, a whole bunch of stuff I think was quite irrelevant because by the time they got to the end of the thing, you know, it kind of ended very abruptly and people were quite upset. But you had Vimbai Kajese interviewing the president. She asked a number of questions. Then it was open to the floor. Only four questions were taken from the floor, which people were quite upset about. I thought it was a great initiative. Let's start there. Let's start with the positives. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a great initiative. It's good for the president to come out and, you know, meet with the youth. This is the first time that I know of that we've had such a platform as young people. So great initiative. Great that the president came out. Great that, you know, it wasn't intimidating from what I saw. you know, it was a platform that I thought people could get up and speak their minds and engage directly with their head of state. It was a wasted opportunity.
I agree.
The questions were very, very lukewarm. In fact, some of them were cold. And he did not look engaged at all. ED was sitting there. And to me, it looked like he came ready for, you know, ready for a bit of a fight. He was
He came with two vice presidents and the Reserve Bank governor. He was ready for
and cabinet ministers. So he had a whole team of people.
Yeah.
He was prepared. He was ready to engage, ready to get some hard-hitting questions. And he got asked to take a selfie, which is fine. I get, you know, do a bit of promo. And then he got asked about, okay, I'll get some of the questions. Anyway, share your thoughts, guys.
Okay, so the first 35 minutes was basically speeches and introductions.
Yes, I mentioned that.
And that to me spoke to, it actually indicated the direction that this was going to go. It was just, for the people who organized this, and I'm really sorry to say this, but it was an ass-kissing exercise. You know, because they didn't do the guest, which is the president of the republic, justice. They didn't do themselves justice, and they represented themselves poorly. This was a very good opportunity to ask the hard questions, which is, what is this government planning to do about young people, and in particular unemployment among young people, entrepreneurship for young people, and opportunity for young people. And while that might have been asked variously, I don't think that it was asked to the, you know, the same depth and content that is required for us to be satisfied, that is required for people, you know, for people to get on a plane and be like, you know what, and it was content for Facebook, and that's great. But we're not in a time where we can say that things are now content for Facebook and it's okay. We're a time where we need real action.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're all going to be saying the same thing. I definitely agree. It was a great initiative, and kudos to Mbaye and her team for just going out there and doing it. I think at the end of the day, I don't know who engaged them. I don't know who, but they did it. And a lot of us, Rungo, Vukura. But at the end of the day, they did it. And yeah, but I definitely agree. I think it was shallow. The prepared questions from Mbaye herself were, in my opinion, shallow. And that's not you know, there's been various reports that perhaps they were prepared by Global Shapers and were pre-approved. I don't know how far true any of that is. I do think that even you can have softball questions that have depth to them. I just think the questions were shallow, and it was really, for me personally, a poor indication on us as youth, because it's not so much about asking a difficult question. It's also about having a valid input to we can no longer be in a situation where we ask something of our government without having a solution ourselves. I'm not necessarily saying that we should know how to work the water reticulation system in Harare, but we should be able to know that, you know, certain cuts can be made, certain things are feasible in the city council in terms of budgeting, to be able to sort something else like that. And I think that's the level of engagement I was looking for. I think if you're going to ask a question about the ease of doing business, you should be able to point to the fact that the government, his government, in continued with an increase in fuel tariffs, which makes us even more, our fuel even more expensive than it already was in terms of regional pricing. Those are simple little facts that are available on the front page of Fingers or any of these newspapers. So I just thought the level of engagement was a bit shallow, and it was very unfortunate. It's very sad.
So
especially for us, Masalad, because their brilliant people, my comrades who you said, would have been seething to see such an opportunity wasted.
So here's the thing. You know, people have discussed the issue that it was invite only and such and such. I have no problems with invite only events. I think that, you know, depending on the kind of engagement you want to have, it could be very useful. What I would say is that it could be, it's the kind of people that you invite to the event and the kind of questions that you ask. So one of the people who got up from the crowd, and this is my thing, my biggest problem, one of the biggest problems was Vimbai asked, you know, too many questions that really weren't of substance, that by the time they got to the floor, they could only ask four questions, which wasn't enough. It would have been better if they could get more questions from the floor. But one of the questions, one of the guys got up and, you know, he spoke about being in JCI and said that he wants, you know, they go around the world and they promote Zimbabwe and they work with grassroots organizations in Zimbabwe and they wanted support from the government. So this comes to your point anyway, you know, if you are engaging, you need to be able to articulate, you know, certain positions. And ED asks him, what sort of support do you want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this was something that, you know, he sort of paused and then he comes up with a, well, we'd like our ministers to travel with us when we go to promote Zimbabwe. I'm telling you, this is what he said. And I was there watching and I was like, wait, what? And then ED thought he said that they'd want, you know, the youth want to accompany ED and the ministers when they're on those trips. No, no, no. It was the other way around. The youth want ministers to come with them when they go, you know, and I say youth in quotes. But for me, it was sad because, one, I don't think this is a representation of all the youth in Zimbabwe, but I do feel that there are, you know, a sizable chunk of our population who, not out of their own fault, but out of the circumstance, haven't gotten to a position where they've engaged in certain settings, in certain fora, and haven't developed, whether it's professionally, practically, enough to the point where they actually understand certain things. There's so much you can get from reading a book. There's so much you can get from academic education. But because we have a high unemployment and because you have people trying to, you know, fit in, there's certain professional settings, a certain understanding of things that I don't think a lot of people have had the opportunity to get. So if you ask them certain questions, you can ask someone a young person, what is it that you want? And they can tell you, I want a job. But if you want to delve deeper, I think the conversation will hit a rock.
Pause.
Yeah, it'll hit some point where it can't go beyond because the thinking hasn't developed beyond that point. And now I'm just wondering, you know, about our youth and what is the current state of the youth in Zimbabwe in terms of, you know, saying that the youth is
my guy.
Yeah.
My guy. Okay. Look, it's a Bentley iPad. Okay. That is the current state of the youth in Zimbabwe. My guy.
You guys remind me of an interview. Have you heard of Memory Ngui?
No, I don't think so.
No, I haven't.
He's a human resources expert, I guess. And he gave an interview a few weeks ago.
He's the guy who's on Capital.
Talent Chadimawan. Capital, yes.
The one who said we're not smart.
Yeah, we're basically two IQ points above functionally stupid. Wow. So, like as a country. But he raises the point that literacy is not an indicator of ability. Neither is it an indicator of intelligence. And, you know, the fact that people have degrees and all these qualifications means you can read and retain information, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you know what to do with it. And yes, Chris, I think that you're quite right in saying that we need to investigate the state of the youth because is it nature? Is it nurture? You know, is it that we are 2 points above functionally stupid and so therefore for us, you know, a change in government means that now the ministers must accompany us on every business meeting to show that we have power and the government is on our side and therefore you must work with us? Or are we saying, are we looking at the environment and saying, this is what we need the government to do for us? And it's not simply civic rights, but it's also economic ability, you know, the economic opening of doors. Like what we were talking about earlier, that before we talk to outside investors, have we made it so that our own investors, me with my $5, is my $5 safe in Zimbabwe? Because if my $5 isn't safe, Bill Gates's $5 billion isn't going to be safe, definitely. So, yeah, man. Okay. It's scary, though. It's very scary.
I mean, look, I'm not one to call the Zimbabwe youth 2 points above functionally stupid.
That's what Bibi Ngui said, not me.
No, in fact, for the Zimbabwe youth, I must fight it. I just think that maybe we overestimate our preparedness for this type of change. And I think that, like certain sections of the opposition, this government has caught us with our pants down because it's been so easy for so long to say, this is wrong. But when actually asked to proffer solutions, true meaningful solutions, it's, we are found wanting. And, that's one of those things, that I guess we're just going to have to rely on think tanks, and white papers written by technocrats, to solve for us, I guess, like everywhere else in the world.
Well, I don't think so. I think, you know, I don't think so entirely. I think,
you know, I was thinking of, sorry to digress, who's funding the think tank?
Petina says she's not getting paid. That's what she said. So I think it's a voluntary organization.
It's producing a white paper is never for free. I mean,
she said she's not getting paid, and she said she's, you know, so we'll just take her word for it.
Somebody is obviously funding it, even if it's not the government.
And
who do you think it could be? The UK, actually, the UK. If we're going to put out a conspiracy, they seem very keen on us coming back to the Commonwealth. That's my position. And it serves their interests.
It does.
Especially after Brexit.
Let's go back to the Commonwealth. People need Commonwealth scholarships for more degrees, guys. You know? Let's be friends with the British. Let's be friends with our former colonial masters. There's nothing wrong with that.
Wow. Can you hear the sarcasm, people? Can you hear all of the sarcasm?
There's no sarcasm there. I think she's being...
serious. I could use a Commonwealth scholarship.
On the scholarship...
Look. If we can do it at the farms, surely we can do it in as a country.
Wow.
This advice, our former...
Wow. You guys aren't serious. In life.
This podcast is quickly degenerating.
But on the issue of the Commonwealth, I mean, I want to see how they play it out. ED did say in the FT interview that, you know, he has no qualms with Theresa May. He actually said the British should stay with the female, prime ministers because they treat us better, or something to that effect. You know, Margaret Thatcher was instrumental.
You should think about that and put more women in cabinet then.
What was his comment to do with, quickly back on the youth, he seemed quite disappointed because he got into the room and he said, I expected to see more young people in here. So it seemed manga maka zara matara.
He's disingenuous. He's been going to these things for the last 37 years. He knows what they're like.
But new dispensation, ka? New dispensation.
He thought things were too had changed.
New dispensation,
everyone, not just
new dispensation.
I bet you they were serving mazoe and my Mari biscuits.
Endearments. Anyway, but he did say something about women, and I thought this was his comment was quite. That's when I thought it was quite disingenuous. I was like, Blazo, your entire cabinet is this just men.
Even the entire cabinet, there is no youth. He had the option to put people like Mayor Wajgadjene in cabinet. He didn't. And maybe he will after the election. But look, I mean, I don't see why he didn't. He didn't have a reason not to.
Fair enough. I mean, I thought, you know, Mayor batted for the guy. So, we discussed this. So...
And a Fortune jersey.
Didn't Fortune get something? Like, also, something I read in the FT interview as well was supposed to. He had said in the FT interview that he was going to have appointed a commissioner of ZEC this week by Friday. So I think in the next, I don't know what happened there, but I think next week we'll have one. I don't know if you guys saw that we have a new. Is it Commissioner General of ZIMRA?
ZIMRA. She's has quite the CV, actually. I don't know. I wasn't prepared. I didn't bring it up, but she seems quite quite impressive. I'm not going to say I'm very happy with that appointment because we all know what Zupenyu has so pointed out. Koro.
I'm going to keep quiet until it's time to sign off now.
So there's that. We'll get more details. I wonder if Mai Bonyongo is still the chairperson of ZIMRA, though. I didn't see anything to the effect that she's
Are they going to work?
I don't know. Auntie, yeah. Bonyongo is no longer Minister of Justice, so of course he's not going to work.
But he's been... But he's been kind of one single story. Is he okay? Him and Xavier, are they okay?
I wonder about Xavier. Actually, I have a theory. This is pure speculation.
Are you going to say? Are you going to ask?
Am I going to what?
Go on.
I was going to ask if a certain missing person and Xavier are on holiday together.
Wow, my guy. No. Let's not take it there. That's funny. I think Xavier's trying to find his way back into ZANU-PF. I think he'll come back, tail between the legs, and beg for mercy.
Lips puckered.
Yes. ready to kiss the mass. Yes. I honestly think... Wow. Yeah. Anyway,
quickly degenerating, guys. We need to go now.
So yeah, that's it, Xavier. We do need to go. We've hit 47 minutes. This opposition episode, guys, it needs to come.
We do need, because Openyu has just been.
She tries to sidetrack us all the time.
I said this last week about the opposition. You guys, people are. There's such an anti-opposition sentiment right now. 60 to 70% absolutely deserved, but the 30% sentiment to Benyu is because you guys are so angry that you're going to be forced to vote ZANU-PF in the next election, and you know you're going to regret it.
No, I'm voting for the independents.
Okay, that's fine. But I'm saying there's other people. There's other people who are having this moral dilemma, where they genuinely don't want to do it, but they're going to, and they want someone to blame preemptively.
And I blame the opposition for that, too.
Wow. Anyway, this is why we need to do the episode, so that everyone can just hash out all their feelings and their thoughts and their, you know, their IQ 2 points above functionally stupid. I think that's what we'll call the episode.
That is 2 points
functionally above stupid episode.
Guys, registration, I think, should still be open. We've crossed the 5 million mark. So 5 million people have registered.
The more public exercise.
Yes. The 5 million people have registered thus far. Please go out and register. Please make sure that you are taking full advantage of the opportunity to vote. Registering doesn't mean you're casting a vote, but it means that you have the ability to cast a vote. So go out, make sure that you're registered to vote. Make sure that come election time, you will vote. We will be giving you all the information that you need as soon as we are aware of it. If you guys need to reach out to me, you can catch me at Chris Charamba on all social media. Do at the podcast, Polly and Beyond ZW on Twitter, Politics and Beyond on Facebook. Over to you guys.
I'm Upenyu Makoni everywhere. Please register to vote.
I'm at Henry Beatty on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, and for you guys. And reach out on at Polly and Beyond on our Twitter page as Politics and Beyond. Thanks, guys. Bye. And now.
Capital 263.